Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. I'm Lara Habib. I present business news at Al Arabiya News Channel. This is an hour-long debate, and the main topic is the cross-industry learnings between the public and the hotel sector. Customer service is actually the cornerstone of the hotel industry. So when His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Prime Minister of the UAE, ruler of Dubai, wanted to grant first-class services to the citizens, he had the vision that governments of the future should be as close to its citizens as hotels. So, can government entities offer the same standard of services as hotels? Can citizens be treated as guests? What are the steps to build a customer-centric culture in government bodies? That's the premise for our session for today. So we are here to learn from the leaders of the hotel industry what are the best practices that can be applied to government bodies. I would like to mention that this is an interactive session, so we would be taking questions throughout the discussion. Also, you can join the discussion on social media under the hashtag GovSummit in English and Al_Hukumiya in Arabic. Let me introduce you to my panel. To my left is Mr. Gerald Lawless, President and CEO of Jumeirah Group. Needless to say, Jumeirah Group owns and operates several hotels inside the UAE and abroad, including, of course, Burj Al Arab, which is the world's most luxurious hotel. And also, I have Mr. Dilip Rajakarir, which is he's the CEO, of course, of hospitality at Minor Hotel Group, which owns Anantara, the hotel chain that started from Thailand and is now globally known for its unique Anantara experience that is offered to its customers. Mr. Gerald, let me start with you and with this simple question. Can actually governments offer the same standard of services to its citizens as hotels?
Well, I certainly think that it needs to have the same objective as hotels, and that we all need a really good culture of service excellence. And you mentioned culture, and it is very much based around how we develop and evolve a culture. I think that years ago, one of the airlines used to have a very nice logo saying, proud to serve. And actually, to serve people is something very honorable, and to look after people is something we should all be very proud to do. And this is what we try to get across to our colleagues, our employees within the hotel industry, within the Jumeirah Group, that it really is something, it's a privilege to be able to serve people. And people should look forward to that. But in order to be able to achieve it, I think it's really important to establish this whole culture within the company. When we started Jumeirah back in 1997 with the opening of the Jumeirah Beach Hotel, we decided at that time, yes, we needed our guiding principles of the company, which would reflect very much the value of our ultimate owner at the time, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, but also that we really would get all of our colleagues to understand what we were trying to achieve within the hotel business, within Jumeirah, as a new luxury hotel company. And we established first the guiding principles, but then most importantly for us, and it's something that's been with us all these years since, we've never changed, and that is we established what we call our hallmarks. And these hallmarks are three very simple instructions we give to everybody, and myself, that we all have to live by them. And they really are to do with the fundamentals of our business. And the fundamentals of our business are people serving people, people looking after people. So what we started with was three hallmarks. The first one is that we always promise we will smile and greet the guest before the guest greets us. And when we do our orientation for our colleagues as they join us, and we do about two sessions a month, I take all of the top team of Jumeirah, and we introduce ourselves to the new colleagues who have joined us from different parts of the world. And then I talk to them about the hallmarks. And I encourage them to say, you know, smile and greet the guest before the guest greets you means you must connect first with the guest. Don't wait for the guest to talk to you. And if the guest decides he doesn't or she doesn't want to talk to you, that's the privilege of the guest. They can say, fine. But you must not be discouraged as a member of the Jumeirah group, as the Jumeirah team, to be able to connect very strongly with this guest and let the guest see. Don't be shy, be confident, but also be respectful. And our second hallmark is
I'm sorry, but greet the guest by name, right?
Well, not necessarily, because if you don't know the guest's name, and I always say, we leave the way you greet the guest very much to your own intelligence and as the circumstances actually dictate. So it might not be the first by name, because you know you may not know the person, but it's one way to get to know the person's name, if you do say hello and you start the connection. And the second hallmark that we have is that as a first response to the request of a guest, we will never say no. And this is vital, because I think maybe in the West, and I think it fits very well with the Arabic culture and the culture of hospitality in the Arab world, in the West, if somebody asks us something we can't do, we just say no, which here is quite rude. And I think it's good because there our employee, our colleague thinks, well, why is he asking me that? I think the answer is no, but I can't say no. So I have to think, how can I come to a reasonable solution here? And we say, if you can't, you must then get assistance from a colleague. And a very important aspect here you might like to talk about later would be the empowerment of that colleague to be able to make the decision. And then our final hallmark, which is equally important, is that we promise from the senior management down to all of our employees that we will treat them with respect and with integrity. And I want them to treat each other with respect and integrity in the workplace. Because the guest sees this. If people treat each other well within the workplace, the guest would feel, yes, this is a good environment, it's a positive environment. So I think that just for, to start anyway, it's this culture of service with pride, with dignity, and feeling it's a privilege to be able to look after other people and to make them happy.
And these steps can be applied to any government entity, in your opinion?
I think they can be applied to any circumstances in life, in any industry. And of course, within government. I mean, government is called civil service, public servants, and should be very proud to be a public servant because you're looking after the public, you're looking after the citizens and the residents of the country.
Mr. Dilip, were the steps used at Anantara or at any of your hotels any different in establishing a customer-centric culture?
Hi, Assalamu alaikum, and it's really great to be here today. For us, we look at, I think as Mr. Lawless sort of explained, from a hotel sector, and how do you apply that to a government or a public sector? The underlying basics are the same, because service has to be embedded into any culture. And we are here to serve our people, and we are here to provide a service. I think I was quite taken up by His Highness, you know, when he made a statement to say that the government of the future is open for its people 24/7. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that we have to be all up waiting and working 24/7. I don't want to scare you to say that you have to work 24/7. But that's not the that's a literal sort of interpretation. But what it means is it's just how do you provide service? Service is given. But what makes you the best or how do you benchmark yourself with the best is how do you actually exceed that service expectation, and that becomes the success of any organization today. It can be a government sector, it can be a hospitality thing, but the common thread is all about service. And today, if you look at the hotel industry, we have different types of guests. We have guests who are corporate, we have guests who are groups, we have guests who come for leisure. If you take that and applied to a garment sector. Within the garment industry, there are various industries. You have tourism, you have health, you have security, you have transportation. So how does the service culture actually get embedded into these different organizations? It's different. If you take, say, health, the garments motivation is to provide the best health service to its people. And how do you do that? So basically, you know, you have a vision, which is actually inspired by His Highness. How does that vision then get cascaded down into the organization? You know, we always talk about tone at the top. Now, when you look at the hospitality or hospitals today, you know, you want to be the best. So the investment has to go in to make the hospitals the best. Now, how do you then create the infrastructure, you know, for so that you have the best doctors, you have the best equipment, you have the best service, and most of all, you have your people who are sort of fully satisfied with the services you provide.
Is there a common code? Like, he gave us an example of greeting the guests before he greets you. Is there a common code that you teach your employees?
Absolutely.
That can be applied also to government entities?
Yes. I think it's whether you're a guest or whether you're a customer, if you're greeted, you know, if someone says to you, when you enter a hotel, and you, if you're greeted saying, Salaam Alaikum, that is, you know, you touch the guest's heart. And it's really important. The greeting is really important for us because, you know, people forget, you know, all the hotels, you know, we do have issues with service. We do have issues with, you know, sometimes the product. Sometimes there's something not working. But as a guest, if someone comes and speaks to you and said, oh, Lara, we're really sorry that we heard that you did experience a guest issue. We're really sorry, and we will make it right. You know, you're going to forget it. And today, the technology is such, you have to address any guest issues before the guest leaves the hotel. It's really important. Because today with Facebook, with Twitter, with everything you have, if there is an issue and the guest leaves the hotel unhappy,
of course,
that goes viral.
We're going to discuss social media later, but I want to mention here, because since you own the Four Seasons Hotel in Thailand, I've been there, and I can't tell you how special I felt when everyone greeted me by my first and last name. So I wanted to mention that. Mr. Gerald mentioned the empowerment of a colleague. We have heard some practices by some hotels on how they empower their employees. It's well known the $2,000 policy of Ritz Carlton. They would give their employees $2,000 and they are free to use it to solve a problem of a customer without going back to the manager. Can this be applied to a government employee, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Why couldn't it be? I don't say that you have to disclose how much the amount is. An interesting anecdote, about 10 years ago in Jumeirah, we decided that we'd like to hear what the big businesses in Dubai think about us as a brand. So we brought in about 20 CEOs who worked with us for a day and a half and telling us what they thought of the company, how they think the company should be taken forward, and what we should do in the future. And one gentleman made a very good point. He came up and he said, you know, I really like your second hallmark, that you never say no as a first response. But what you don't do properly in Jumeirah, this is 10 years ago, he said, is you don't give the authority to the junior staff behind the front desk or whatever to make the decision. And he gave the example, I can stay in your hotel. It might cost me between $600 and $1,000, depending on the time of the year. And then we have a discussion about whether or not I used a Coca-Cola from the private bar. And he said, you know, Coca-Cola costs you 50 cents. So why don't you allow your employee to use his or her intelligence? You have the technology to be able to track whatever discounts or whatever allowances are being made. So obviously, if somebody is abusing it, you can always call them aside quietly and say, you know, this is a bit too generous. So we have done that, and we took that advice very, very much to heart. And I think absolutely, if you don't trust your employee, if you don't empower your employee, and yes, you don't need to be naive about it. You can obviously have all the technology there to be able to monitor what's happening, but it gives a much better guest level of satisfaction if you can say, look, I don't know whether you had the Coke or not, but you know what? Don't worry about it. Have it with my compliments. I mean, it sounds a lot more generous and a much better attitude. And I think particularly in government service as well, if you can have that kind of empowerment with the person that's interfacing with the guest, let's call the customer, a guest, then I think that you will get a much better level of service satisfaction.
Then you should know how to hire this employee. Before moving to this topic, let me hear what Mr. Dilip wants to say. Don't you think it might be a bit trickier that you're empowering a government employee to solve government-related issues?
I don't think so. It's how do you actually have that empowerment? Empowerment is about creating leaders in any society. Now, if I walk into a government department, say, for example, I go for my visa, and I hope you don't reject my visa, but when I go into a government department to get my visa, for example, if the officer there says, oh, hi, Mr. Dilip, we're so glad to have you, and we look at your application, there are a few things we need to understand, but let me just check with my superiors to see whether we can grant you a visa. Okay, then you start to get nervous. But if that officer says to you, hello, Mr. Dilip, we're so glad to have you. There are some issues with your application, but I think we can work around it, and there is a solution, and we're going to grant you a visa. Which one do you choose? Second one. You know, we always talk about, there are two types of people, actually. I say to our leaders or our team, there are two types of people who wake up in the morning and they go and look at their mirror and say, do I have to go to work? How many of you do that? There are two types of people. One, I say...
Be honest.
There are people who call, I say, who have to work to live. There's another type, the people who live to work. Now, I'm not going to ask you which one you fall into, but in our company, it's all about we actually live to work. Because I don't want our employees to say, I have to go to work today. Ah, I really don't like it. Because I have to go do the same job. And you know, the best thing they can do is to leave the company. Because they're not doing good to your guests, and they're not doing good to the company. So empowering people is a key thing. It's how do you empower? There is a trust element. You have to trust your people, because that's why you employ them as leaders. And when you employ leaders, please make sure that you give them the freedom to perform their job. Don't tie their hands on the back and say, okay, now you swim. You can't swim, you will drown. Now that's not about empowerment. So I think it's how you balance, and I think it's finding that balance is the best way. And certainly in a government organization, you know, you have to empower your people so that they can make decisions and they can drive the success of the government.
Let's stop a bit on this point. Mr. Gerald, I want to share with you first the story. I've read an article about a doorman in a hotel, in one of Fairmont's hotel, and he was excellent in his job, and how his behavior reflected positively also on his colleague. And we're talking about a doorman. So the point of the story is how important is it to hire winners to ensure customer satisfaction? This is probably the only criteria that the private sector would look at. However, it might be different in the public sector. What do you think? There might be policies, there might be other considerations when hiring a government employee.
No, sure. I mean, are you asking me? I think that I accept that, you know, you need to employ leaders or potential leaders, but I actually prefer your definition. You need to employ winners, first of all, because you give the idea of a doorman. And we've had similar experiences. We had this great guy who unfortunately has left his sense, but Bashir was his name. He worked at the Jumeirah Beach Hotel. And Bashir was the best doorman I've ever seen. He was from Karachi. And he actually gave us the idea that, you know, certain people do jobs and they do them excellently. And because of whatever reason, his background, his education, his training, he said, well, you know, that person has reached a ceiling. Now, we've got to make sure he is more valuable to us as a doorman than he is as an assistant front office manager, for example. If we promote him, we will destroy him, because we've got the right man in the right place. Now, how do we motivate him? And this is really what it's about, is how do you motivate people who are doing a fantastic job, as you say, creating winners and keeping them as winners. So we came up with this concept of having colleagues, as we call our employees, of exceptional value. So we said we would take about 100 or 200 of these every year, we would add to the cohort, and we would say, right, you, Bashir, you're a great doorman, but we know if we push you too far that we will actually undermine you. So what we want to do with you, Bashir, is we said, you are, for example, we have grading A, B, C, D, E. You are grade E, and that job is grade E. However, while you're doing that job, we're going to upgrade you to grade D. And then we're going to talk to you about, are there things that you really need in life? Do you have family in Karachi? Do you have a son that wants to go to university? Can we, as an enlightened employer, and I don't think it matters whether you're a government organization or a private sector employer, you can always come in to do these motivational things. And that's how you create huge loyalty to the company, and you also create the winners you talk about. And ultimately, I guess, if they have the potential, they can have the potential to be leaders as well, but not necessarily by definition. Not everybody can be a leader, otherwise you have chaos. You have to have that kind of situation where, you know, a lot of people say, you know what, I don't want the responsibility of being general manager of the hotel. I just love being a valued doorman, a doorman that I get well rewarded, my company loves me, and I can help my family and look after my family.
Let me be clearer with Mr. Dilip. We have heard stories about how sometimes government employees can be inefficient because they were hired through probably nepotism or favoritism, especially in third world countries. So do you think that the public sector is able to attract the same competent employee given these factors?
It's a tricky question.
You mightn't get that visa, did it?
I think if you look at any organization, whether it's government or public, I'm sure there is some politics involved. But it's how do you overcome those challenges? Yes, I think, it's a shame that people actually think that the government sector is not efficient. But I can tell you, one of the reasons I was looking at, I'll just give you an example. The UK health sector, today it's in a little bit of a shambles because, they're trying to reform. But, what happens is a government gets elected, they appoint a minister. The minister spends the first 3 years talking about how the previous government made this big budget deficit and how they have really failed and they're trying to put it back right. They spend the next 2 years trying to do something. At the end of the term, what happens? They're still the same. So, it doesn't matter which sector you're looking at, whether it's a government sector or a public sector. But I think, yes, we always say, we call it employ people for their attitude, because if you have the right attitude, and it's all about passion. I think we or you as Emiratis have to be really proud to be an Emirati. As soon as you wear that badge in any organization, whether it's defense or whether it's hospitals or whether it's anything, you should know that we are here to serve our people. When you have that change mentality, it's a winning organization. We always say, for us, winning is not an option. Winning is a habit. And you have to make that habit as yours. That's where the success is. So I think you can do it.
Let's talk about a bit now about the financial rewards. To have a satisfied customer, you need a motivated employee. In many of the service-related industries, the employee would take that extra mile because he might get a tip from the client. Well, tipping for a government employee is considered a bribe and a crime. How can you play around this? for you, Mr. Jen?
Well, I think, like everything, I think it's important. And it sort of goes to a wider question, and I don't want to encroach on what you might want to talk about later, but I do think it's important that you have measurement. And it's not about whether you get a tip or not. You said creating winners. You know, everybody needs to break their teams down into smaller units, or their business down into smaller units. And you compare one unit with another unit. You establish, to establish a culture of excellence and a culture of service, I think it's important that you have your KPIs. I mean, within the hotel business, and we talked about this previously, and I know that Dilip's company is exactly the same, we all have different measurements, but very often the same organizations do it.
Can you give us examples?
I will, but I won't give the one that Dilip is going to give, but I'll give you one. For example, we use a company called LQA, which is Leading Quality Assurance. And this company actually sends in mystery guests, and they stay in the hotel. Now, our management very often spent a lot of time trying to figure out whether or not he's the inspector, so there's always a challenge there as far as that's concerned. But actually, it works very well. And then there's a proper scoring. And this particular company, LQA, they also do nearly all of the other five-star hotel companies. So then he will benchmark us, or our hotel by hotel, against their competitor set, which we have a very good benchmarking. And then the KPIs, the key performance indicators, of our employees, department by department, all the way through, hotel by hotel, their incentive scheme depends on this. And it's nothing to do with tipping, because actually tipping is quite a controversial thing, as you rightly said. But even within our business, some people feel, you know, why should I have to tip? I'm already paying the person. And it's not about doing what we do for tips, it's doing what we do, sorry to say it again, but to be winners, to do what we should be doing for the business. And breaking it down into something like having mystery guests, mystery inspectors, you have this benchmarking. We do it with social media. And all of the social media is now combined under a company, for example, called Revenate. So they troll through all the comments that are made about your hotel, about our hotel, to see what the people are saying. They would then start scoring it, evaluating it, and give you back your feedback versus your competition. And it's this kind of breaking your organization down into teams and then comparing them to each other. I mean, you could have, for example, how does the post office do versus immigration, for example, within a city or within Dubai. It would be very interesting to see what the scores are like, particularly if you have, say, one company like Revenate doing the benchmarking.
Actually, I would like to mention here also that tipping is not welcomed in some parts of the world, in Japan, for example. Tab, if we stay on the financial reward topic, of course, the reward to an employee is related to his KPI and also to the financial situation of the company, yes, whether the company is profitable or not. The hotels are profit centers. However, this might be different to a government entity. Some government entities, they do not generate revenues. So does this mean this might be an obstacle for rewarding employees?
It's all a matter of achieving your targets. And if your target is to have so many people go through, say, immigration at the airport, okay, you're not charging them, they're coming through, but it's the efficiency. It's like we see in some places where they monitor whether or not the individual was friendly or not friendly. But whatever targets you set, you have to have a way of measuring them. And in measuring the targets, I think pay should always be variable. And there should be the fixed pay and the variable amount, and the variable amount should be set on incentives. And these incentives don't always have to be financial.
Mr. Dilip, do you have anything else to add?
Well, I think, any government organization, whether it's a government organization or whether it's a hospitality, we have to operate within the bounds of being commercial. Now, a commercial thing, it doesn't mean that you have to make a profit. There are some organizations which are not for profit, but just because it's not for profit, it doesn't mean that you have to waste resources. So that's really the key. So, and then when it comes to tipping, you know, which is a fairly sensitive issue within the hotel sector, as you know. You know, for us in the hotel industry, the people actually make our brand. It's the people who drive your brand, because they're the people who are providing the guest experience. They're the people who are providing the service. And therefore, these guests then come back and we all actually make a profit. So if you apply that to a government sector, it's the same. We all have KPIs, and it's how you drive your KPIs becomes the issue. Like, you know, our GMs have a KPI. You know, it's about revenue, it's about profit, it's about guest experience, and it's about people. Now, and also, you know, there are two, when you look at people, there are some who are actually motivated by financial reward. But there are some people or some employees who are motivated by recognition.
Employee of the month.
Employee of the month. So you don't have to actually give them cash, or you don't have to pay them a big bonus or something. But when you recognize these employees, you call them and you say, you know what, Mr. So-and-so, you've been a fantastic employee of the month. We recognize you. This is your holiday with your wife. You can go to any of our hotels and treat your wife. That is totally mind-blowing. You know, you sort of, you know, we talk about meeting the, exceeding the guest expectation. And as soon as you exceed your employee expectation, they will do anything for you.
Can I just add to that as well?
Yes, I agree, briefly, before we open the floor for some questions.
I agree with you. I think another very important measurement when we talk about surveys, when we talk about guest comments and guest feedback, we do within the company as well regular anonymous surveys, in that we get an outside company to do it, of our colleague satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Are our employees happy? And if the boss is always getting a low score in colleague satisfaction, we will take that boss aside and have a talk. And part of the KPIs, for example, of senior management in relation to their annual incentive scheme is also based on whether or not the colleague opinion surveys, the employee opinion surveys, are to the target or not. But I think it's very important, because if you have happy employees, for sure you will end up having happy guests. And if you have happy guests, you'll make more profit.
For sure. We can open the floor now for a question. Please introduce yourself before asking the question. We need the mics to be passed. Please, I will begin with him, and then it will be your turn.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Athman Khoury from Higher Corporation of Specialized Zones in Abu Dhabi. Thanks for the experience that you shared today and the for information. It is great to have the best government services here. However, you guys have a competition, and these competitions force you to have the best services in your field. And there's many chains and many hotels that you have to provide better services. However, in the government, there's no competition. Or in another word, there's no five different immigration departments or five different commercial departments that provide licenses or provide visas. Plus, there's some employees that they think that nobody can compete us, and you guys have to come to us, everyone. Supposed to come to us, and they need us. We don't need them. So this kind of mentality and these kind of concepts affects some of the government entities to provide the better services. Thank you.
Do you want someone specific to answer the question? Who would like to volunteer? Okay. Please, briefly, I would say, because we have still many points to discuss.
Sure. I think the basic underlying concept can be applied to any department. I understand that the service is very specific, but if you say to that government department, whether it's immigration or whether it's health, you know, there is a set budget. And how do you actually spend that budget? And how do you actually exceed your guest expectation? How do you measure it? You know, and is your guests happy? Your customers happy? Have you actually created the best infrastructure so that, you know, so you, because there is a vision for every single department, that vision then gets cascaded down into various strategies, and how best you have executed the strategy is the measurement. So we always say, you know, I think the Dubai government has also introduced a performance management system or performance thing. It's all about What gets measured gets managed. If you don't measure, you don't manage. So it doesn't matter whether it's any department. But I think, you know, the measurement criteria becomes important, and actually you can measure whether you have actually achieved the ultimate vision, which has been set by the government, so that you know that you've achieved your KPIs.
And I think also you can create that internal competition to ensure, I mean, you can say that, okay, you have, sorry to all go to immigration, but you have immigration at the airport, you have immigration in the city, you know, where people come for visas. How do the different teams do? How are they comparing to each other? And I do think you motivate people very well by good leadership.
We will take one more question.
Yes, Engineer Abdel Khadim from Sheikh Zayed Housing Program. Actually, my question regarding the level of service. How do we make it sustainable? You know, the service, because it's from people to people. So it's the people is coming, for example, having a very big problem. Any circumstances, the level is coming, usually it's not sustainable. How do I make it sustainable? Whether with this administration or with this company or wherever. Thank you.
I think it's a great question because so many different things are of a cultural nature. You know, we feel that if somebody doesn't smile at us, that's not nice, that's not friendly. Other cultures might say, well, that person's been a bit too friendly with me by smiling at me, and why is he smiling at me? So I think this comes in an awful lot to really trying to educate your people, particularly in a multicultural society like we have here in Dubai. And we always talk to our employees. You know, we have 140 different nationalities working for Jumeirah in Dubai at the moment. And to try to then look at how many different nationalities do we have staying with us as customers? And you know, how can we marry them up? And this is a great challenge, and you're right to bring up the thing, how can we sustain it? But that's why I think you have to have a very straightforward set of hallmarks, as we have. And that's why people have said to me with my team over the years, let's have another hallmark, a sixth hallmark. I said, no, we will have three hallmarks, we'll keep them simple, and we'll stick to this all the way through. And we will teach all our nationalities how to apply the hallmarks, not only in their culture, but more importantly, to try to understand the culture of the guest. I mean, for example, we have Russian guests. So we say, oh, he's not very friendly. Well, the guy doesn't speak English, you know, so it's quite difficult to come across as a friendly person if you can't actually verbally communicate. So I'm not really answering your question except acknowledging that there are lots of challenges, but I do think in keeping, say, something like your hallmarks to a limited number, keep them simple and keep repeating it and keep training people to handle different people in different ways and not to become discouraged because somebody might not be friendly. It might be just they don't understand what you're saying.
From this point, I would like to add, let's continue the discussion. We will open the floor again for questions. Dubai took an initiative, actually UAE took an initiative in rating government agencies the way hotels are rated, like you have a 2-star, 3-star, even a 7-star, like Burj Al Arab. It's based on 123 criteria on 8 different sections. How much do you think this would be a paradigm shift in ensuring the consistency of customer service? Mr. Dilip.
Okay. I think rating is about being competitive. And being competitive is how do you win. So it's important. Various government sectors can be rated. They can be rated using different measurement criteria, the same as hotels. You know, when we as hoteliers, you know, we get rated, whether it's a 3-star, 4-star, 5-star. And you know, there is a brand, you know, there is a brand affiliation where as a guest, you know, you would say, oh, I like to go to Anantara. You know why? Because last time they really blew me out. The service was fantastic and the employees were really good and you would go. And that's a rating. You know, that's the best rating you can get. So therefore, even within the garment sectors, you can apply rating. Rating can be, you have to look at each sector different and come up with some measurement criteria. And rating is good because then your employees start to become competitive because you start to measure and you start to manage those measurements. Because we always say in any organization, you know, we say, you know, keep your top 20 people who are the best, but try and get rid of the bottom 10 because they actually pull the organization down. And how does that happen? It's through rating. So rating is good.
Mr. Gerald, who should rate, do you think, the government agencies should be, like in the case of the UAE, a third party? Because even in hotels, we don't have like a one unified rating agency.
Well, that's in a government type situation, I think that it would be very advisable to have an outside agency doing the rating based on the criteria that have already been set. And you know, in the hotel business, we have like a 5-star in Dubai might not be the same as a 5-star in say Cairo or somewhere else. It might be better, it might be worse. It's not the point I'm making. But the point I'm making is that it's subjective according to the according to the actual agency within the city, and usually it's a government agency. But nowadays we've got social media, and I know it's something that everybody talks about, social media, but we do have it. We have direct. I don't look anymore whether a hotel is 5-star, 6-star, 7-star if I go to stay in a city where there isn't a Jumeirah hotel, that is, and I just look up TripAdvisor, and I see what the other guests have said. That's what interests me. And I think that ultimately, you know, the whole rating situation will have to adjust to the huge amount of information that's now available for our customers. And it should be the same within government. Government bodies and government departments should be encouraging their customers to go online, to go into the social media, to comment on the service they're receiving. And then you can easily have, like, Revenator, that those people I was talking about can come together and say, well, this is how you're scoring. This is what your customers are saying, which I think is very important. And another big issue, I think, you know, we talk about everything about measurement, but there's no substitute for leadership by example. And I think we got some great leaders in Dubai, as we know, and in this country. And look at all the people coming to this summit, for example, from the government, who are coming here because they want to improve, because they want to deliver better service and do jobs better than they've been doing them, which I think is brilliant for this country, and it's fantastic. Congratulations to everybody attending.
Mr. Gerald mentioned the social media and how hotels are using social media. How about the government entities? How should their presence be on social media? For example, we have seen presidents having Twitter accounts, YouTube channels. Is that sufficient, or it should be more interactive?
Well, I think it's both. It has to be interactive, because then it becomes a two-way communication as to, you know, people's comments. There is a feedback process, and there is a follow-up as well. So, and today, you know, there is a big shift from when you look at technology. The advancement of technology is huge. When you look at it 5 years ago, you know, we book hotels, you know, based on, we just go down based on brochures. If the picture is nice, if the room looks good, you would book it. But today, actually, a guest spends at least 30 minutes just doing some research, like Jarab was saying, you know, whether it's the Facebook, whether it's the Twitter, what are the guests saying about that hotel before they actually make a booking? So therefore, you know, Facebook is important. Technology actually drives today's, whether it's hospitality or whether it's a garment sector or anything. Because end of the day, within any sector or within the garment departments, what you want is you want to be the best in class. And how do you become the best in class? For you to become the best in class, you then have to benchmark against the best and see how can we beat them. And what Dubai has done in the last few years is just mind-boggling, because what they have achieved is amazing. They've created the infrastructure, they've created the resources, whether it's the people, whether it's the finance, whether it's the infrastructure, whether it's the logistics, whether it's the technology, it's all done. The 2020 vision is amazing, because you have a vision which is another 10 years ahead, and how do you achieve that vision? It's all about, like, you know, how do you become from a linear organization, like just looking within the box, to become an exponential organization, which is now looking outside the box, is fantastic. So I think, you know, I have to say, like, I have to agree with you. Like, you know, I think what Dubai has set the tone in terms of the future, in terms of the people, in terms of the various industries and how they're going to achieve it. And the record, the last 10 years, they have done it. Can they do it the next 10 years? Absolutely. So this becomes, you know, I think most of the other organizations will look at Middle East to learn from the best practice. I think, you know, I think that's something the people of the Emiratis have to be really proud of.
So he's going to get the visa, right?
Yeah, you're in.
Well, if we're talking about social media, we need to stop a bit and discuss the issue of bad media. Because an unsatisfied customer in the physical world, he would tell like 6 of his friends. However, on social media, he can tell 6,000 of his friends. So how you can you control bad media on social media?
Yeah, deliver good service and you won't have bad media. And if it's malicious media, you know, you can complain to the trip advisors of this world and say, you know, this person never stayed in my hotel and he's complaining about it, for example. So it's malicious. And we certainly, like most of the hotel companies, have our management and have our own monitoring as well as an outside agency, and we're very careful to make sure that we respond. Sometimes we respond offline, sometimes we'll respond online, depending on the actual circumstances.
Should you have like a third party monitoring all the mentions about your hotels?
Well, we do that anyway. Yes. Yeah, yes. I mean, it's just like you monitor press cuttings and everything and what the press is saying about you. You monitor what the media is saying about you on social media. Absolutely. I think everybody does it because you just really have to nowadays.
And this should be the case also in government entities.
I'm sure that if government is encouraging comment on the social media, it's very important as well to ensure that it's monitored. And fair, because as you say, it's not always fair.
Also, we have an issue of e-services that are offered by the government. A survey done by Google and Booz showed, like, for example, more than 40% of internet users in the GCC, they don't know that they can pay their fines online. So we have a problem then in advertising our services. Shall we do that in the most efficient way on social media? What's the way that you used as hotels when you started introducing your e-services?
Well, I think what's really important is to have a very good website. And the website needs to be interactive, it needs to be user-friendly, and it needs to encourage people to go more and more into it. I would definitely get everybody who wants to go online with us. We always said from the beginning, you know, make it easy to book, make it easy to interact. So that if you want to get the service, if you want to buy the service, it must be easy to buy. It's a fundamental of salesmanship. And similarly, I think that's really important.
Mr. Dilip, because how to encourage people not only to check your website, but to use it, especially that we still have the security issues?
I think it's all about seamless service. If your website is in different languages, which caters for the different types of people, well, I think the first thing is, you know, if you have a fine, I think it should be very easy to deal with and paid by electronic, whether it's banking or through credit cards, because I think today the technology is so sophisticated and it's fairly secure, and people have to feel secure to actually put their credit card and pay the fine. Whether it's a fine or whether it's a fee for a service or whatever it is. So therefore, it has to be seamless, it has to be easy to use, and it should be really quick to pay. So I think it's really important.
We will take one more question from the audience. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Fado Shurbagi from Emirates Post Group. I just have a couple of concerns. Allow me if I can ask more than one question. The first one is related to the part that if we are to deal with the customers differently. I mean that we are working in the postal sector and we are having different massive diversions and diversity types of customers. How can we enhance and educate or let our staff, our counter staff, our customer service staff to deal with the customers and talk to him and each customer in his own way, personality?
I think we discussed this point,
yes,
right?
It covered part of that,
yes.
But I need that. That was covered in the hospitality section. For us as a government, if we are facing this, I mean.
Well, I really love to say something here, if you don't mind, because I agree it's a challenge, but listen, human beings, we're not that different. We all like courtesy. Most of us like a smile.
Of course.
Most of us like to be treated with dignity when we interact,
this
whether
is from
it's
the
a hotel
ethical,
or a government.
Yeah, this is from the ethical part of you, if you can call it, or if the okay.
I think it's very, very much from the fundamental of service delivery is the attitude of the person on the other side of the counter to the customer. If that attitude, and you talked about it, you hire people with attitude, train social skills, and make it relevant to the nationality, that's not a problem. But it's got to be learning, development, training, and hiring for attitude, and instilling the positive attitude. As we said from the beginning, you are here to serve the customer. That's why I'm here. That's why I work. Okay. It's to serve people who use our hotels and our businesses. And we have diversified businesses. You know, we have people working in loyalty cards, for example. I tell them, you got to smile. But they say, but I'm on the phone. Why is a smile down the phone? You know, your voice sounds different when you're smiling.
Yeah.
You get your attitude across. If I say, this is Gerald Lawless here, go back, don't say, yes, sir. Say, yes, Mr. Lawless. You know, and be culturally aware. And it's a matter of training, and then reminding people. We do refreshers all the time on our hallmarks.
Educating them all the night.
But and I know it, because sometimes, you know, the post office, for example, really, there's huge opportunity there for a different skill set to be instilled in lots of the customer-facing employees.
Your second question,
the other
briefly.
Part, yeah. Briefly,
sorry.
And sorry for that. It's related to the KPIs that we're saying that each one has to have a certain KPI for his attitude, for his performance, for everything. When measuring this, as we're having, we have to have measuring tools, that is to evaluate. And is there any possibility that we are, at any point, might think that these KPIs being set for a certain level or person or designation is not in the right format, criteria, if we can call?
Mr. Dilip, would you like
I'm not clear. KPIs, can we reshape them in the middle of the evaluation or upon the results of the evaluation? Can this be done?
Well, I think, once you set KPIs, there is a clear expectation from both parties, from you as to what you expect from your associate, and your associate knows what you expect from you. So I think it's clear. But in the middle, if you try and change KPIs, you know, it becomes confusing. So therefore, unless otherwise the strategy has changed, you know, where you have to reshape, then it's okay. But I think, sometimes it's very clear that your voice, the tone has to be clear, you know, and the measurement criteria has to be measurable. You know, any KPI has to be measurable.
Let's move to another point. We've talked about e-services. How about the m-services? I have seen recently that both Burj Al Arab and Anantara introduced the mobile application. And we have seen last year Dubai launching the m-government initiative aiming at introducing all government services on mobile applications within 2 years. Is this the new e-government?
Lara, everybody will be gone for lunch because I've heard the food is so good at Jumeirah. You
know? They're very hungry. we're briefing.
The mobile apps are important, yeah. And I think mobiles also have to become more user-friendly, quite frankly. We found out that we put our Wi-Fi into our limousines from the airport, which again gives it an opportunity, much greater opportunity for a guest to start the check-in process from the car. I personally don't know. I mean, everybody says mobile apps, and my people say it in IT, so we go for mobile apps. But they're nice to look at, but they're not always the easiest thing to make an actual booking on a mobile app. But it's coming more and more, and it will happen.
Okay. So my last question would be to Mr. Dilip. If you were a head of a government with very low customer or citizen satisfaction score, what would be your priorities in the first 100 days?
Now your visa really depends on this.
it's very clear. I think you will have to, as I said before, you establish the vision. You then set up the strategy. You set up an action plan. You put some timelines. You put some measurement criteria. And you keep doing this over and over and over again until you have 100% guest satisfaction. I think it's very easy because a government department and a public and the hotel sector is the same. We adopt the same thing. Like, you know, I think if you look at His Highness, you know, I think he mentioned about five things. One was about empowering his people. The second one about technology. The third one was about innovation, and the fourth one about being creative and be efficient. And that's the culture you need to embed into any organization to be the winning organization of today.
I want to thank you all for being here. Thank you for your input. I want to thank my esteemed guests. Hope you enjoyed the session.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.